when Katie and I travel in the summer with all of our kiddos, we can't help sometimes but look at other travelers that have RVs and campers and have some level of envy towards them. We feel it, okay? I know we shouldn't, but we do because it looks so accommodating to families, right? Your own space, a place that's air conditioned, you can get out of the heat, nap your kiddos in a pack and play. Well, we discovered Outdoorsy.com, and this is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S. They offer thousands of RVs and campers nationwide, and they're available in your neighborhood. And there's multiple ways for you to travel and to do this, okay? You can drive it yourself, or you could tow it, or you can have it delivered and fully set up to wherever you're going at your destination, okay? That's pretty convenient. Now, there's built-in peace of mind that comes with this. There's comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, roadside assistance is included in your rental. And here's the deal. There's great value because oftentimes these are more affordable than hotels or vacation rentals. So it's your own space and it can be more affordable as well. If you are over 21 years of age, you do have to be 21 years in order to rent these things. The way you do it is it's just three simple steps, okay? You go to outdoorsy.com and you search and you choose an RV that fits your family and your trip, okay? And then you book with confidence. There's insurance, there's support, there's protection included. And then you hit the road, okay? Or if you're having it delivered to your location, I guess you'd still hit the road, but you would drive in your own car and then you'd arrive at your destination with an RV fully set up, okay? Those are the three steps. And this summer, they're actually running a campaign where when you use our code, which is FAMILY, they remove all service fees from your booking. And so when you go to outdoorsy.com, that's outdoorsy.com, and you use our code FAMILY at checkout, then you don't have to pay the service fees. They remove them. Okay. And in for instances like this, less fees are better. So this summer, if you're going to 250th anniversary celebrations, if you're going to down Route 66 to celebrate its 100th year anniversary, if you're going to fiddle contests, family camps, whatever it is, Christian conferences, go to outdoorsy.com and utilize their great services. Okay, before we jump into today's topic, which is our experience growing up in purity culture, I do want to let you know this is the last call ever, okay? We're going to stop talking about this price increase because the price is going to be increased after today's episode, okay? This is coming up, going up on a Thursday, and prices are going up on August 1st. And so go over to Voper Music Academy if you're looking to have any of your children or if you yourself are looking to learn the piano, the guitar, the fiddle, the mandolin, the ukulele this coming school year. As we've already mentioned it, we have structured this so that families can learn an instrument together. So if you've got, you know, a child that you want to have learn piano, but you're not so sure about their younger sibling or their older sibling, well, you can get one subscription and you guys can all work through that subscription together. Same goes with the live calls, because not only does Voberg Music Academy have weekly lessons where you're able to go through our course and our curriculum, there's also live calls where you're able to get live coaching from our teachers, perform with the other students and for the other students. You also get to earn physical badges mailed to your home when you achieve various benchmarks. And as of today, we've shipped out over 700 physical badges to VMA students, which is really cool. And currently we're sending out Six Songs of Summer badges.
I was going to say that's outside of Six Songs of Summer badges, because we do like 350 of those the last couple of years.
That's a good point. We've shipped out 700 of our rank badges, right? So when you hit the criterias for each rank, we've sent out over 1,000 Six Songs of Summer badges over the years. We're sending out 354 this week to those of you that have successfully completed the Six Songs of Summer challenge. Anyways, boy, I could go on and on and on about Voberg Music Academy. And the reason is because, and this actually has to do with why we're raising the prices. When we started Voberg Music Academy, it was simply a weekly lesson. And that was in a PDF. And students were able to learn with that and make huge progress. But as technology has allowed us to, we've been able to add live calls, add a lot more curriculum in our platform, add a community where now students are able to post themselves performing and encourage one another, not to mention the physical badges and everything I already mentioned. So anyways, price is going up. Lock in your price today to enjoy any of those courses. Okay, so what prompted today's topic was not my and Katie's desire to talk about our upbringing in the purity culture. It was a listener question, and I'm going to read it from a distance here, so hopefully I get it right. They say, "Hi there, first generation Christian here. I know you guys grew up in a Christian family. I've been looking into the toxicities of purity culture. Would you guys be able to talk about your experience of sexual purity being teenagers in a church?" And this person's raising young boys at the moment. So that's the context. That's what prompted this question. And you know, it's funny, I didn't know I was growing up in purity culture, but in retrospect, I was. And to tell you the truth, it was a great childhood, a great adolescence, great young adult season, and I've had a better marriage than I could have ever asked for.
So we're selling that purity culture, prosperity gospel over here. Okay. So I think when it comes down to purity culture, like Elisha said, I didn't know I was growing up in it either. I think all the parents that got involved in what we now call purity culture were people that wanted something different for their children. You know, they'd experienced maybe brokenness in their relationships. They realized the impact that had in their own marriages, because frankly, brokenness does have an impact in our marriages. Both before marriage, we do bring that into marriage to a certain extent, and then within marriage, anytime there's sin, that does bring death to relationship. And so there's a very practical cause and effect there. And they wanted to eliminate the sin that and the brokenness that their kids walked through so that they didn't have to deal with that in their marriages. So I think it came from a beautiful place. I think that... Unfortunately, purity obviously is a great thing to pursue. The culture side of it ended up being very fear-based, which I think a lot of reactions to things end up being fear-based. And so instead of having a really beautiful, holistic picture of sexuality and where it is good and where it is bad, and maybe teaching that in a very holistic way, evangelical purity culture just started kind of fear-mongering and really making people scared that, hey, they were going to be damaged goods and their marriages weren't going to be as happy and all these things. So people were operating from this place of performance versus a heart posture towards that, and maybe even seeing sexuality as something that was just evil and dirty and shameful in general, instead of seeing, no, sexuality is this beautiful God-given gift that's given to us for marriage when it happens in His time and in His way. So depending on maybe what certain people's parents taught them, they got kind of part of a picture, a little fragment, instead of a holistic perspective of sexuality within and outside of marriage.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of, and still are, a lot of first-generation Christians, or maybe they grew up in a nominally Christian home, but want to have such a different, they want their children to have such a different experience through their teen years and young adult years than what they had. And I think it comes from an extremely, you know, like any time a parent's showing intentionality in this area, that's good. Because I think that more times than not, when actually I'd say like most of the time when parents are, you know, passive or abdicate the role of educating their children and discipling their children in regards to sexual ethic and just sexual, you know, education in general, then the results are poor, right? The results are hurt and sin and shame and maybe just regret that those young adults then have to live with. So it is a good, I think it comes from a good place, right? Going back to like the intent of these parents, I think was admirable, and that maybe they didn't want for their children what they experienced. They wanted to be proactive in their children's lives. And you said, Katie, and I agree with your analysis that much of it was fear-based, and which I don't think is all bad when teaching sexual ethic and when talking about sin. Like, I think there needs to be a healthy fear of sin and a sobriety regarding what can transpire when you hand yourself over to sin.
I think it's really a fear of God. I think that's what I grew up with, is a fear of God. I wasn't concerned that if, you know, I got out and got pregnant out of wedlock, I knew I was going to disappoint my parents, but I knew they would always love me. You know, like I wasn't worried about being like thrown out on the street by them or excommunicated or anything, you know,
letter.
Yeah, no, it was a true fear of God and, not wanting to sin against Him.
Yes, absolutely. And I want that to be a part of our children's, you know, motivation or their heart. But I think also in addition to it being, fear, kind of having there be fear-based, I think there was, you made the joke at the beginning, like our prosperity gospel of, you know, whatever it was, yeah, purity culture. There was, I think that was taught sometimes too, that like, hey, if you save yourself for marriage, then it's like God owes you. Like he's going to guarantee you this abundant life after the fact. Kind of that Dave Ramsey model, like live like no one else today so that later you can live like no one else or something like that. And why I do think what God's order is where life is most enjoyed and you can have maximum, you know, pleasure and, you know, in the presence of the Lord, there's fullness of joy at his right hand are pleasures forevermore. Like, I think he really wants us to have, that fullness of life, those pleasures forevermore and that comes with living in accordance to his will. So it's not like this is a completely false, expectation on the surface where it's like, hey, if you obey God, you will have a more, I think you like you will have you can have hardships. We know that too, right? You'll have hardships, but I think if you obey God, you actually are setting yourself up to have a much more joy-filled life down the road.
It's going to be more joy-filled and fruit-filled, regardless of whether it's painful or hard or not.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But if you're like guaranteeing it in a very specific, sorry, if you're looking for a guarantee in a very specific way, like if I give this amount of money, I'm going to sow this seed, then I will get 100x return financially. I don't think that's like, I don't think God's quid pro quo that way, mm-hmm. where it's like, hey, if you, you know, save yourself for marriage, you'll get in this category, this, you know, return for the rest of your life. I think that if you just honor God, you'll be able to walk in the joy of the Lord.
Yeah,
for your life.
Part of that is just the lightness of walking in the freedom of not having walked in sin. Like, right. You know, sin in and of itself, I think, purity culture, unfortunately, makes sin still look very shiny and exciting. Instead of saying, hey, this sin just, it's straight up brings death. It's not ideal. Say you never get married. Like God doesn't owe you a spouse. Say you never get married. You will still walk in more of the joy of the Lord and that freedom and that closeness with him if you don't go through sin that separates you from God. And so even if your marriage is a sexless marriage and your spouse is in pain all the time and you're unable to do that, your marriage will still be more blessed by your heart posture wanting to honor and serve the Lord. Then it's not like if you'd gone out and gotten whatever you could before you got into that relationship, you'd be happier now. Yeah. Or, you know what I'm saying? Doing things God's way is always better for us, even when it's hard and it's painful and it brings us through sorrow.
Yeah. And that's like, boy, I just want to live with that, like obedience. I want to obey Christ. I want to pursue holiness and righteousness. I want those to be the things that I'm pursuing. And when I look back at my childhood, and I made the joke, or not the joke, I made the comment that, you know, we now realize we were brought up in purity culture. I say that with this caveat, like my parents were their own people that really stopped the best interest of each individual child. And so while my parents were maybe influenced by some of the curriculum and the literature that was coming out around this topic, you know, I Kissed Dating Goodbye and the different conservative homeschool groups that we were part of. We were part of ATI for a while. Vision Forum was very influential in our family's life. My parents were still first and foremost seeking the Lord and being, subservient to him and then applying it to their parenting. And so I think I had a very blessed experience growing up in that time period, right? In that kind of atmosphere, because my parents were looking to disciple each one of their children as individuals, and they had each one of our me and my siblings' hearts, and they were going to scripture, and so I don't think that they were like reading a book and then trying to apply the principles across the board or apply the tactics across the board to all their children and say, hey, these are the hard and fast rules, nobody's stepping out these boundaries, it's this age, or these, you know, never alone in this situation, but you can be in this situation. You know, they weren't getting real specific like that. It was a heart posture. And I look back, and especially as I hear about more people, you know, my contemporaries, when I hear about their experience growing up, either in unchristian or Christian environments that were very conservative, it just makes me more and more grateful for how my father guided me through adolescence and then, you know, sexual temptation and wanting to pursue purity and wanting marriage to be something that I strive for, but not having that be some false promise. Right? Like my dad never gave me the impression that, hey, you won't have temptation of sin anymore once you're married. So just get to the finish line and then you'll be good to go, which a lot of people had that expectation. Whether that was came from their parents or a pastor or, I think there's just different, even theological camps that kind of imply that where it's like, hey, you can like that once you're married, then you'll be good to go. And that's just not how it works.
Yeah. I think, you know, you're mentioning that with your parents and I felt the same way. It's funny, this conversation with purity culture, I've always had a hard time with because clearly there have been flaws in it, but also it's like we want to be seeking purity, right? So like, why would we bash this thing? And then a couple years ago, I stumbled upon the theology of the body when we were looking into contraception or not, or all those things. And I kind of found that holistic perspective of chastity, kind of in compared with purity, purity being, I think purity can sometimes be typified as the letter of the law almost. Like, well, I kept my virginity, but I did these things, or, you know, everyone kind of warps purity in the way that they want. Versus chastity is a lot more big picture of caring for people and out of love for other people, guarding what's yours, protecting what's yours, out of respect and love for them and out of respect and love for who God created you to be. And it's just a lot bigger perspective, the theology of the body, of reverence towards the human body that God designed. And not seeing it as this transactional, you know, piece of meat that we throw around. Obviously we see that to the extreme in the world, but we can also see contractual language thrown around in marriage, where it's like, okay. And young boys might be brought up with the perspective of, okay, you take care of a wife and then she'll provide for you sexually. And while there is blessing in that relationship, it's not, that's not a completely false statement. That is a contractual example of marriage versus a covenantal one, which is you give your body and mind and soul holistically, completely to your spouse, and they give themselves completely and holistically to you. It's a beautiful gift. And the sexual union is a physical, like expression of that sacramental love and the bigger covenant that is made before God. So it's more than just this exchange of goods, which I think sometimes we can still use in a Christian circle.
I agree. Cause I think most of the Christian circles that I'm a part of, or that I have been a part of, would look, I told you, I think a couple weeks ago, I saw a lady with a shirt on that said, what did it say? Like buy my eggs or something like that. Just crass, right? Just really, demeaning. Towards, and we know that there's a whole industry now out there with where children are just being bought and sold, and there's brokers. I mean, there's somebody else that we literally met that's her job. She's a broker for like surrogate parents, and then, you know, I guess people that are then having their baby, I guess, incubated with the surrogate mother. And so there's this whole industry that really treats the human body as a commodity, as just a materialistic substance that is there for our pleasure. And it's like, what do you want to do with these bodies? And we don't look, obviously they're rejecting the possibility of there being an eternal soul there, and that body being created in that human being created in the image of God. And so we see like that very crass expression of people that diminish the value of the body. And they're like, it doesn't, humans' bodies, they're just these physical utilitarian things that are for our, you know, pleasure essentially. But then we don't have a very robust theology as Christians, I don't think, in certain circles, to say, no, we need to steward this and we need to honor it and reverence it because it is made in the image of God. And I mean, we're told our bodies do not belong to ourselves. We've been bought at a price. Glorify God, therefore, in your bodies. And I do think that more holistic approach, what you said is chastity, brings a lot more reverence and kind of a healthy sobriety to what it is we're actually, where these eternal souls are housed, right? We call them their tent. We know they're temporary, but there is something still sacred about these physical bodies and we should treat them as such.
Yes. And I think that my parents really did a good job. I think even though we didn't have this term, theology of the body, I was raised with this in my home. And I saw this in my parents' marriage. Here's like a little, you know, some spark notes on it, but it's treating the physical body as inherently good. So not something that's inherently evil or going to be a hazard to you. You know, I think outside purity culture really treats your sexuality as a hazard. Like you're just on the edge of issues, you know, and it's the same thing with even like the public school system. My friends in the public school, that's the secular system, right? And they all had to carry around the baby dolls and their sophomore year and their freshman year to try to like scare them into not getting pregnant, I guess. But it was just, it's treating sexuality as a hazard versus being inherently good, sacramental, and designed to reveal God's love through a total life-giving gift of oneself to another. And the emphasis is really on virtue. And this virtue is holistic. It's how you dress. It's how you present. It's out of the goodwill of your heart towards other people. It's how you view God's view of you as a single person before you are married and outside a relationship. It's not promising that you'll have anything other than singleness, just being like you can be content here and be completely whole unless God has that other person for you to join with someday. And it really focuses on aligning those internal passions with authentic capacity for love and communion. So it's like passion can be there, but also this love and this, this spiritual communion is there as well in these moments. And so I think I was able to be a very, you know, it's a very like strict version. Like I was like so far away from, I was like the prudish version. Okay. Getting married. But go into marriage with such a freedom and a joy in the marital sexual union, which I know is difficult for some of my friends that were raised in the same culture. They had a hard time. They struggled with shame in marriage, or it just stressed them out. And they didn't really feel like they could just enjoy that intimacy and that vulnerability. But I think from seeing in my parents, like, hey, there's a lot of joy here when it's done to the glory of God. It didn't put that pressure. Like no part of me felt dirty or sinful or wrong, even having totally kept you know, God keeping me until marriage, if that makes sense. Kind of like the switch being off and then the switch being on.
Right.
And I would hope that for our daughter, you know, that she would have confidence and freedom in walking out a virtuous life before marriage. And if God has marriage for her, then she would be free to walk out a virtuous life within that and not feel like any part of what God has given her and that is wrong.
Right. You have to fully embrace it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, similarly, I think for our sons is we really want them to feel like they can live an abundant, full, complete life as single young men. Marriage is such a gift, and he that findeth a wife findeth a good thing. And it's better to marry than to burn, as Paul talks about. Like we do see marriage as being a great gift, and this being one of the reasons it's a great gift is that you get to then express this desire in the confines of marriage. But we never want to talk about it, as some circles do, like it's as necessary as food and water to survive. People will talk about it as a need, like it's that. Like you will die if you don't have this thing.
Which we did for a long time. Like here on the podcast, we've used that language for a long time because that was the language we were both kind of raised with.
I don't know if we were raised with it, but I think we got around it because that's not how my father talked about it.
I'm wondering about that book, like His Needs, Her Needs, just because uses the word need.
Yep.
I think it's, I mean, obviously like domestic support isn't necessarily a need.
Right,
it's
companionship.
You know what I mean? Like your husband isn't going to die without any of these things. It's just like ways that you can show love in a very big way. So I think sometimes the need, maybe the phrasing there can throw some people off.
I think it can.
You know, and, I'm trying to think of the women's needs, but I know none of those are actually like lifeblood, actual human needs either.
Well, and a lot of men over the centuries have used that as a way to, you know, manipulate women. They're like, well, this is a need, you know, this is a way that you can serve me. And, especially outside of marriage, you know, to really manipulate women and to kind of force them, coerce them. But I do think that if they have the perspective of, I mean, Jesus said with food and clothing, be there with content. And I do want our children, our sons especially, to say, man, this is not ignore the desire and say, hey, this is, I don't even act like it's not even a real thing. acknowledge it, just like we've had all sorts of desires our whole life that you just need to bring under the you need to submit to God's law and to his will. That can be regarding your career, your finance, various your business aspirations or professional aspirations, even ministry aspirations, where you're kind of like, this is a desire that I have, but not now, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't right now, but that doesn't make you incomplete in that moment. Then you just get mm-hmm. to be obedient in that moment. And we all know that the heart of man is never satisfied. So we want to continually be submitting it to the Lord's leading mm-hmm. in our life so that he can grant us those desires as they are more and more aligned with what he would have for us. And I think it is a good thing for a man to desire a woman. Like, that's a healthy thing. I would be very like, it's good that my boys mm-hmm. are all attracted to women right now, like already, you know, it's like they notice women, they like girls, and I like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't want them to have this expectation that's like, well, now I'm just, until I get married, I'm not complete. Or until mm-hmm. I get married, there's going to be this constant failing where mm-hmm. I'm kind of like walking in sin or, you know, slogging it out. I think there can be victorious, meaningful, mm-hmm. fruitful life. And on some extent, I don't think I did this perfectly. I had a very meaningful, fruitful life up until mm-hmm. marriage, right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't sitting there constantly in guilt of sin. There was sin that was in that season of life, to be sure, but it wasn't like I was just living in this place of despair and guilt. I think the Lord was able to use me in tons of meaningful ways.
Well, you also didn't just become numb to it either, I don't think.
As far as like change my nutrition so that I like tried to.
No, I mean, when sin did happen, you retained a sensitive conscience towards it.
Yes.
Because we would want our boys to consider that. I think sometimes when you tell a man that marriage will solve the problem or solve the lust or the sexual temptation, that's going to be their whole life. Just like sin for women is always going to be a temptation our whole life. It doesn't go away when we get married. I think sometimes it can be easier to be like, well, this is just a part of my single life.
Yep.
But as soon as I get married, it's all going to go away. So I'm not going to really worry too much about trying to cull it now.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, something else I was going to say. Oh, I think when you are a parent that wants to, you know, guide your child through, you know, their youth and then their adolescence and their teenage, whatever. I mean, I say that word adolescence. I don't even know if that word's, you know, a Christian word to use, but going through puberty and, you know,
changing. Questioning all the words we're using. Yeah,
exactly.
Is that even a Christian perspective to have?
You know, maybe you have a past that you're not proud of and you have mm-hmm. regrets from, but that's where it's like so critical for you to have your identity in Christ and say, old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new, and walk in that newness of life and then not have fear and guilt and regret then inform how you parent your child. I think you can, obviously we should all learn from our pasts, but we should be taking those lessons as a new creation in Christ. Like, wow. Thank you, Lord, that you brought me to this place of redemption and a right relationship with you, and that I can be in a healthy marriage now where there's oneness and there's forgiveness and there's all these things, you know, that are happening. Now teach me and show me how I can steward my child through these seasons where they don't make the same mistakes that I do. Because I certainly, like I said, we love our marriage, but I am going to do what I can to have my boys not fall into various pitfalls that mm-hmm. I myself fell into, or, you know, get caught up in various mm-hmm. snares that I found myself caught up in. But I don't want to do that from a place of fear or guilt or just, you know, deep, like oppressive regret. It's like, wow, this place of confidence that the Lord will lead you. He will guide you. I'm grateful for the mm-hmm. forgiveness that I have and the identity that I now have in Christ. But with that said, I want to guide you in, you know, maybe a little slightly different way.
Yeah. I heard once purity culture described as like these two dogs changed to trees. And it's like parents put all these restrictions on their kids, but as soon as the chain snaps on the dogs, they just go running at each other. Mm-hmm. There's no actual self-control in the dog. There's no virtue in the dog. It's just this animalistic experience. And I think that sometimes we can treat our kids that way and just put the chains on. And I'm not saying here don't have practical
boundaries
and guidelines, because yes. I think that's another ditch, but we could talk about that in a second. But sometimes we could just you know, have the chaperone be there or have the, you know, have all these things. And our kids don't have any virtue or any character, and they aren't in a position to actually control their own passions or be subject to the Lord. And it's hard to give away something that we don't even have control over. Mm. You know, it's not ours to even give because it wasn't ours to keep. And so I think that control and that virtue has to go beyond boundaries that a parent is enforcing, because right. we all know kids break the boundaries or sneak out at night or do, you know, when the heart of man is deceitfully wicked, and that child or that young adult is not having a heart that's contrite before the Lord and wanting what he has, then they're just going to go their own way regardless of what kinds of lock you put on the door.
Sure.
And so we don't want to parent from that perspective. On the flip side, though, it's funny how I've heard some parents coming out of purity culture, I guess, and thinking that there's just no rhyme or reason to really having any guidelines and just being like, well, we trust them, they're the Lord's. And I'm like, okay, like all relationships are going to face the same pressures and temptations.
Yeah.
Yes. And so sometimes not putting yourself in that position is the wisest thing to do.
Right.
And I would really encourage our kids. There are certain situations I would encourage them to not be in.
No doubt.
Because you're setting yourself up, kind of like how the wise man foresees the evil, he hides himself. That's mentioned in Proverbs, the simple pass by and are punished. And we don't want our kids to be like, oh, I'm, you know, if they want to be with someone very badly in marriage, which we hope they get to that point by the time they're married someone, then it's going to be a battle to fight preserving each other's dignity and until marriage.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because, I mean, that's the thing. When you look at kind of the I guess, the key characteristics of purity culture, aside from like the purity ring, they were really good things, you know, like waiting to date until you feel like you're in a position to marriage, for marriage, not kissing, not making out, like, you know, limiting physical contact, when you're dating, not being alone together, right? Like, these are things that I think are really good tactics that we would want to pass on to our children. Because that's when you just think it doesn't matter. Like, oh, they'll figure it out. It's like, yeah, that's the problem, is that they do figure it out. But it's not in a healthy way, and it's not in a Christian way, and it's not in an honoring way. And so I do think that having an expectation that when you're, from the time your kids are young, I think that this is a very real thing, is say, we're not going to date until marriage is even an option. I just think that that's practically a good thing to do. And then when you are dating, having strict guidelines, you know, like, hey, we're not going to be alone in each other's houses. We're not going to be alone in the car and at dark, you know, parked up above the bluff, you know, like, you know, at midnight.
That's very specific.
Yeah. and then carrying that out. I think that,
but we wouldn't say, I mean, you mentioned not being alone, which is obviously really nice from a protective stance, but it is like difficult to get to know each other.
No, I think you can. I think you can go on dates. I think you can drive together. What is what I'm saying? Don't like park.
Yeah. We're like, all like be in public spaces together. Yeah. And this is something that I've heard some people say, like, well, that's just not very practical, or that's very annoying to always have to have someone else at the house when you're at the house, or, you know, all these things. And it's like, yeah, but that is, what's funny is this isn't even a Christian thing. This is like decorum out of social respect for the other person that has been around for a very long time.
Right.
It's just men and women alone is in a space that is not public, has not been seen as appropriate.
Yeah, it's not proper.
Yeah, exactly. Just proper forever. And so I think there's, yes, your righteousness isn't found in that, but we want our children to be above board and not have room for, you know, avoiding the appearance of evil, and also not putting themselves in that position of being tempted.
Yeah. And understanding that we live in an egalitarian culture where, you know, obviously the workforce is half women. And so when our boys are getting jobs and our daughters are getting jobs, well, we only have one daughter now, but if we have another daughter, when our daughters are getting jobs, who knows? You know, like they might have a boss that's, you know, of the opposite sex, and they find themselves in a room alone with them. We don't want them to be like, what am I doing here? Like, and come home, be like, what? I failed. I wasn't supposed to be. That's not what we're talking about. You know, like.
Yeah. But I would say, like, growing up, I wouldn't be alone in a room with a man in a situation like that, unless there's a window, or like, hey, can I have the door cracked open? Or, you know, cause a lot of things do happen in exactly those scenarios you're taking advantage of.
I completely agree. And so I think giving our kids a tool belt, you know, like tactics, you know, avoiding driving people, like, cause that would be, even some of the jobs I've had, coworkers would ask for rides to various places and just being like, I don't do that. You know, like I don't, and it's awkward for like 2 seconds, but then you're grateful down the road, you know, like that's the case, that you held that standard, right? Cause there's no like gray, or there's no weirdness that people can bring up down the road. Cause it just, you know, there was never an opportunity for it. And similarly, I think, in ministry opportunities and ministry environments, I'm with you. Like, we are in an egalitarian world, but then even in that world, it stands out in a good way when men and when women are kind of like, oh, no, you know what? Like, I'm not going to carpool with you. And they can come up with whatever reason they want to, but they just don't. It's just a policy that they have. Or they find a way to live in an egalitarian world in a way that honors either their current spouse or their future spouse. And it's just kind of more of a conservative route to take.
Yeah, exactly. So, and as I guess we don't want to necessarily put those boundaries on our kids. We want those to be our own children's boundaries and explain to them the wisdom of those and understand that they're going to make decisions. We cannot force the decisions that our kids are going to make as young adults. And so all we can do is build this virtue into them, give them this wisdom and this guidance and say, basically, we aren't going to tell our kids, hey, boundaries don't matter. You know, we're going to say, hey, these are ones we really recommend. As you're honoring this other person. Yeah.
And I guess the reason I brought up the whole egalitarian workplace and the society is because I think I've observed, and I don't know if I do this perfectly, but I'm very comfortable working with women. And I have my whole life since I was like, you know, 13, 14, 15, my first jobs. But I do think some men, that's like, they are either flirting with women or they're like, very shy and don't know how to interact. There's these two extremes. Even with like Christian married men, it's like those are their only way they know how to interact with women. And I don't think I don't want my boys to feel like those are the only options. It's like you can be very upstanding, professional, and not be flirting and not be, you know, inappropriate.
Not be scared either.
And not be scared, exactly. And so that's, I think, what I would like for my boys.
Yeah. Again, not having that fear-based approach when it comes to women.
Yeah.
That's just like, oh, they're going to like jump out and get me. It's like, we really want our kids to be confident and capable. And again, have this bigger perspective of who we are before Christ. And so they're like, okay, a woman is more than just a sexual temptation or a hazard or, you know, something to trip me up. It's just like, we can have a great working relationship as a sister in Christ, or just treating her as another, you know, person who God created. I don't have to over-sexualize this relationship.
Exactly.
At all. So yeah, giving that to them, I'm sure it will be easier said than done depending on the situation. But I mean, I feel like that. I don't feel like Elisha's going around to every woman he's interacted with or worked with is like, this is only seen as the sexual temptation.
Right.
It's like, you know, you just treat them as professional.
Exactly.
And that's how we want our boys to treat them. I think there was one other thing that I wanted to say with the purity culture and
less. I don't know. But I mean, it's interesting, you know, even this listener that wrote in that prompted this question, I still fall on the side of the fence. You know, this gets brought up with like fundamentalism, which again, we were brought up in that purity culture, which was kind of adjacent or, you know, downstream from fundamentalism. They get talked about almost only in a negative light now in 2026, as though they're just like these, yeah, they're pejoratives now. That's how people use them. And I think that Satan works in that because I don't think that like fundamentalism on its face is wrong. It's like when you look up fundamentalism, you're like, I want those to all be true about me. And I think the same thing when you look at the motive or the heart behind purity culture, you're like, wow, I want that for my children. I want that for me. It's like to have this heart that's honoring the Lord and to have that be true in your actions as well. And so I think people just kind of tritely start throwing out these movements or whatever what you want to call them without actually considering how beneficial much of them could be to our life. And especially when you compare it to like, well, what's the alternative, right? What is, I'm not saying that there weren't some unfortunate situations that came out of these movements, and maybe people blamed the movement themselves, but I don't even think it was like the principles or the fundamentals of these movements. It was like the way that they were applied in a poor way, you know, the way the parents parented through them. And so I just am so prone to like, kind of, I don't know, defending or advocating some of these more conservative movements that have happened over the last 100 years and be like, well, honestly, if I had to choose, I'd still stick with that one, you know?
Oh yeah.
And so, yeah.
We'd still fall on that side of the fence.
No
like
doubt.
If our kids are going to blame us for something, we'd rather it be you were too overprotective.
Right.
Not you were underprotective.
Right.
I think that, something else I was going to say is often the people that I hear throw out the boundaries or really see the boundaries as no issue is people that did not experience a very passionate relationship in their dating relationship. And I would just assume that my children, that would be not the norm for our kids.
Right.
You know, not that that doesn't happen. There are people that are very mature and composed and just not that physically motivated, I think, as opposed to other people that are. And I would assume when it comes to our children that that's going to be the norm, not assume that they're going to, you know, just be totally comfortable sitting on the couch and not just feel any draw towards each other.
Yeah.
You know, like to me, I wouldn't want a relationship like that personally. I like feeling a strong draw towards Elisha. I liked that when we were dating. I think it's a really beautiful, healthy thing. So it's not like everybody needs that. But I do think expecting our kids to just not have any physical attraction towards each other, that's they have to stifle. It's just not the assumption that I would make.
Right. We don't want to make that assumption. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's more an exception.
And if you end up giving them, you know, guidance and boundaries that go way beyond anything they ever, you know, would ever even want to do, well, then you were over aggressive and that's probably fine.
Yeah. It's like, it's not going to actually bother them. That's the funny thing is if you give a kid boundaries that is going to already have tons of boundaries, I guess, or if you're going to recommend
themselves.
Those, then, and they aren't fighting that temptation with the other, the person in their relationship, then it's not going to bother them.
Yeah.
So either way, I think it's good to err on the side of some of these boundaries that I don't think are purity culture boundaries. I think they're social norms that in our day and age of everybody of hookup culture, we've gotten very numb to the appropriate way to treat a man and the appropriate way to treat a woman.
Exactly.
And it just used to be with more respect and more, honor in keeping that person's integrity and their reputation spotless.
Exactly.
And I just think that's what we want our boys to do. We don't want them to put a girl in compromising situations, whether her family or social circle cares or not.
Yep.
It doesn't look good. It's not what a gentleman does.
Exactly. That this thing, I think a gentleman does care about optics. It's like, yeah, you care about the heart and what's actually happening in reality, more, but maintaining a good testimony and doing that for, you know, helping the person that you're dating or that you're courting, also maintain a good reputation and have that integrity.
Yeah, that's what we want for our sons. So I think it's going to be hard though. I'm going to be honest. Like,
I know.
Like, I picture all these boys. I'm just like, Lord, I pray just gives each one of them wisdom. You know, I know Elisha's the protector for Luz, and I have no doubt he's going to do a very good job.
No doubt.
I don't. I have zero doubts.
Thanks for the vote of confidence.
So I feel good in that regard, but I think it's different when you're sending out a bunch of boys in the world. It's more on you as a parent to really prepare them, I feel like, to they're going to be making a lot of their own decisions. Mm-hmm. And depending on whether that girl's father is protective or not, they might be given a lot of free rein.
Exactly.
And so it's going to be up to them to really uphold the standard for themselves and whoever they're dating. Exactly. And that's going to be a lot of responsibility for a young guy. So anyways, praying for wisdom.
Folks, thank you all so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.